now batting for the Cubs corner, the host, Anthony Pasquale.
What do you say, everybody? Welcome back to the Cubs corner. Happy to be on another season's worth of Cubs talk with you guys. Of course, the season is now underway. We're on the first Cubs off day of the season. Today is Thursday, April 4th. The Cubs just finished off a sweep of the Colorado Rockies, who appear to be one of the worst teams in baseball already. Of course, it was nice to see Chris Bryant back in town, but I think he and the rest of the Rockies were excited to get on a plane and get back to somewhere warmer. The weather was miserable, but as always, the Cubs fans always showed up. Christopher Morel off to an insanely hot start with Seiya Suzuki. That and more on this edition of the Cubs Corner. Opening day a week ago today, the Cubs took on the Texas Rangers, and frankly, it went about as bad as you could have imagined. The Cubs had a lead, 1-0, and then they also led 2-1. But just about everything that you could imagine going wrong in that game did. First of all, Justin Steele got his first career opening day start, and he was effective. He went almost 5 innings worth, 4 innings and 2/3, had 6 strikeouts, only allowed 3 hits, 1 walk in the first inning, and only allowed 1 run. But he exited with a really weird injury on a little slow roller to the pitcher's mound. He gloved it, flipped it over to first base. Michael Busch secured the out, but Steele was on the ground holding his knee. Now, it turns out there's no major damage. It's just a hamstring strain. I think a lot of people were worried when he grabbed his knee that it could be, you know, one of the ligaments, ACL, MCL, that sort of thing. But thankfully, that was avoided. It's a hamstring injury and not a tear, just a strain. Unfortunately for the Cubs, Steele did go on the injured list. Is expected to miss most, if not all, of April, but should be healthy the rest of the way. But once Steele went down, the rest of the game just kind of went to studs. And the Cubs ended up blowing a lead, blowing a save. Adbert Alzolay, his first appearance of the year, ends up taking the blown save. Drew Smyly came in the 10th inning when the game went to extras and gave up the winning run, so he takes the loss. And the Cubs go 0-1 on the season opener. Now, there are obviously things to point out and like. Christopher Morel was really good in that game. He hit a triple. Cody Bellinger had a knock. The only RBIs came from Dansby Swanson and Cody Bellinger. But you had leads. You blew them. It's a game that you probably would have liked to have, but 161 left, right? So you go to the next day after the off day and the Cubs play the Rangers again, and this one was not pretty. They lost 11-2. Kyle Hendricks was roughed up a little bit. He gave up 5 runs in 3 2/3 innings, and then the other 6 runs came off the arm of Ben Brown, who the Cubs called up retroactively when they placed Justin Steele on the injured list. Ben Brown, a highly touted prospect. Cubs are really excited to see what he can do. They bring him out of the bullpen, and he can only make it 5 outs. Gives up 5 hits, 6 runs, a homer, only was able to strike out 1, and the Cubs fall to 0-2. Now, this is when everybody on Cubs Twitter or Cubs X, whatever you want to call it, starts to panic. What is this team going to look like? Are we ever going to win a game again? But since then, the tides have turned. It's been much better for the Chicago Cubs. 4 straight wins, including the series finale with the Texas Rangers, a 9-5 drubbing of the reigning World Series champions. That's when the Cubs finally got on the board a little bit. 9 runs, a home run from Christopher Morel. Dansby Swanson had a double. Ian Happ, 4 hits, 3 runs driven in. He had a really strong game. Seiya Suzuki, another 2 hits and 2 runs driven in. A really nice game to get those 9 runs and their first win of the year. And that brought it all to this week, where the Cubs hosted the Colorado Rockies for their home opener and first series at Wrigley Field. Now, Craig Counsell, he's 3-0 at Wrigley Field, ladies and gentlemen, a place that he has unfortunately come into and won before with the Milwaukee Brewers. Now it's his home park, and he could take advantage of that weather, that stadium, the fans that were phenomenal all week long. Monday was the home opener. Shota Imanaga got the start for the Cubs, and boy, was he brilliant. With Justin Steele on the shelf, you really need somebody to emerge as the top dog in that staff. And it looks like it's going to be Shota Imanaga. He was phenomenal in his debut. Even got the crowd fired up a little bit. He went 5 innings, no hits. Then in the 6th inning, he did give up a pair of hits. No runs, no walks. He was incredibly efficient. 9 strikeouts in just the 6 innings pitched. 3 full innings of his 6 were accounted for by the punch-out. Really love to see that out of him. Offensively, it wasn't great. The Cubs didn't score until the 6th inning, and they put all the runs up in the 6th and the 7th. A few RBI hits from Cody Bellinger. He drove in 2, and the rest came on errors. A bases clearing inside the park little league home run for Christopher Morel that drove in 2, and he came around to score on a fielding error from Nolan Jones in left. The ball went through his legs all the way to the wall, and the Cubs took a 3-0 lead. They end up winning 5-0 on Wrigley Field's opening day. A really good start at Wrigley for them. Then the following day, the offense continued 12-2, and the Cubs clubbed 4 home runs out of Wrigley Field. Christopher Morel hit another one. Seiya Suzuki hit one. Garrett Cooper, the new guy, clubbed one and almost hit for the cycle. And Cody Bellinger, to the pouring out tune of Cody, Cody, Cody from the fans, turned on a pitch, put it off the scoreboard in right field. And see, that's what I think separates Wrigley Field. First series of the year against the Rockies, it's a 10-run game. The game doesn't matter. It's freezing cold, pouring rain, and the fans are still there. They're still chanting Cody. It's still an electric atmosphere. And Bellinger, who the Cubs were pining to re-sign all offseason, delivered with a blast off the right field scoreboard. A really great moment that I think we're going to come back to as the year goes on. And it happened in the 2nd home game of the year. Cubs come away with a 12-2 win. The pitcher on the mound that day was Javier Assad. He was great. Only gave up 4 hits and just the 1 walk in 6 innings, a shutout ball. You start that Rocky series with 12 innings, 14 strikeouts, no runs from your starting pitchers, Shota Imanaga and Javier Assad. And those are the guys that started 4 and 5 in your rotation. What a great sign to build off of in the rotation as the season continues. The bullpen was a little shaky in that one. Jose Quas gave up 2 runs. But Luke Little slammed the door in that one for the 12-2 win. And he started last night's game against the Rockies that looked like it was going to be a breeze. Luke Little got through 1 inning with no harm. Then Ben Brown came in and finally settled into the big leagues. Pitched 4 great innings, 5 strikeouts, only allowed 1 run. And the Cubs were up 5-0 and 8-2. And all of a sudden, at the end of the 8th inning, we're tied 8-8. It was a game the Cubs almost blew. A few bullpen arms to blame. Julian Merriweather gave up a run. Yency Almonte, who the Cubs acquired in that Michael Bush Almonte for Jackson Ferris trade, he gave up 3 runs. And Hector Neris took a blown save, giving up 2 to tie things at 8. But in the bottom of the 8th inning, Miles Mastroboni led off and got on a dropped 3rd strike. Then Ian Happ had a single. Then we're at 1st and 3rd, Happ at 1st, and Mastroboni at 3rd. Then Seiya Suzuki lined one on the ground to 3rd base. Mastroboni going on contact. He scored. The Cubs take a 9-8 lead. Bring Adbert Alzolay in for the bottom of the 9th, and he slammed the door with the first official people's fist of the 2024 campaign. He got the save. The win goes to Adbert Alzolay as well. The blown save to Hector Neris. And the Cubs have rattled off 4 straight wins. Now, there's a few things to talk about. Obviously, you have to be pretty happy with the way the pitching staff is, at least the starting staff, has shaken out, especially since Justin Steele went down. When he goes down, first of all, you don't know how long it's going to be. You're worried that your ace is going to be out for a prolonged amount of time. And then the next thought has to be, how do we fill those innings? How do we protect our bullpen? How do we get guys deep into games? Now, the thing I was thinking is, it really exposes not the depth of starting pitching, because there's a lot of guys that can start. Obviously, Ben Brown, Cade Horton's down there in the minors with Hayden Wesneski as well. Drew Smyly is a guy on the current roster who has experience starting. Javier Assad, Jordan Wicks, Jameson Taillon's on the injured list but coming back soon. Kyle Hendricks, Shota Imanaga, Justin Steele. You're like 10 deep with starters. but you're one deep with an ace, and that's Justin Steele. Now, obviously, Shota Imanaga certainly could become one, but it's too early to say that he is an ace yet. And that means when your ace goes down, you're missing that stopper. You're missing that leader of your rotation, which bothers me why the Cubs didn't target a guy like Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery. Obviously, you can never have enough pitching depth, so why not get some more at the top instead of stacking the bottom of your pitching rotation? It's something that bothered me, but so far, the collection of Wicks, Imanaga, and Assad have been really good. They're missing bats, getting a lot of whiffs, and they're also keeping guys off the base paths via walks. So you have to be happy with the starting rotation. As the Cubs play the Dodgers this weekend, it's going to be Kyle Hendricks tomorrow. It's going to be Wicks on Saturday and Imanaga on Sunday, I believe. Maybe Imanaga Saturday and Wicks on Sunday. But either way, you have to be pretty confident in those guys' ability to get some outs over the weekend against arguably the best team in baseball. Now, offensively, the first few games were a little bit concerning. There wasn't a whole lot of power, not a whole lot of traffic on the bases. But once the Cubs got that 9-5 win over Texas, finally started taking some walks, putting the ball in play, moving runners around the bases, it's looked a lot better. But there's a few guys that you just have to highlight. Seiya Suzuki has been incredible early on. He might be cementing his case for National League MVP and doing so early. He's been great thus far for the Cubs. Couple of home runs already. He's hitting well over 300 in the early going of the 2024 season. Two home runs, eight runs driven in, an OPS north of 900, and he's hitting 333 on the season. And Christopher Morel, he's been everything the Cubs have wanted and more. He's hitting 375 with two home runs and four runs driven in. He's got a triple, a couple of doubles already. The thing with Christopher Morel is similar to Javi Baez. So much excitement, so much energy, so much passion, a big swing, a lot of pop, but he chases a lot. Early on in this season, though, the chase rate has been way down, and as a result, Morel has gotten a lot of pitches he can handle, and he's been the Cubs' most productive hitter, maybe aside from Seiya Suzuki thus far. The issue with Morel is the Cubs have kind of carved out third base as his position, and he is really bad defensively. Really bad. Three errors already, and he's only started four games there, and there have been a lot of calls that could have gone the other way and been errors as well. He could easily have about six or seven so far on the season. Now, it makes sense why the Cubs want him to figure out third base. Because if he figures out third base, first base is a natural platoon for Michael Busch, a left-handed hitter against righties, and Garrett Cooper, a right-handed hitter against lefties. That makes sense. And then your designated hitter on any given day could be a collection of Cooper or Busch, if you like that matchup, Mike Tauchman, or you could give Tauchman a start in the outfield and let Bellinger or Happ or Suzuki DH. But if you need Morel to be your DH, that hamstrings your lineup flexibility so much because you need either Nick Madrigal, Miles Mastroboni, or once healthy, Patrick Wisdom in the lineup, which weakens you offensively to give you just a little bit of a boost defensively. Now, Madrigal, he's a good defensive third baseman, but with hardly any pop and struggles to sometimes even get the ball out of the infield, Nick Madrigal is not the guy you want coming up in a big spot late in games. That's Christopher Morel. But on the flip side, Christopher Morel is not the guy you want at third base if you need a play made. That's Nick Madrigal. So you hope eventually Christopher Morel can kind of shake the nerves and rattle the dust off and finally figure out third base and at least be average. That way his above-average bat can be such an advantage. But right now you're kind of doing a trade-off of getting this all-star caliber bat with this minor league defender at third base. That's the problem with Christopher Morel. If he can figure out third base, you get so much more flexibility, even if you wanted to bring up Alexander Canario as a fourth outfielder slash designated hitter. But if Morel is at DH every day, all of your top prospects who you want to come up and play, Owen Casey, Alexander Canario, Pete Crow Armstrong, they're all outfielders with no real path because of Happ, Bellinger, and Suzuki. DH is not a true path then if Morel has that clogged up. And then third base is wide open for anybody to take when you don't have any real offense there, with the exception of Patrick Wisdom's potential to hit 40 homers and strike out 400 times in a season. So that's the issue with third base. First base, on the other hand, is looking pretty good. Two nights ago, Garrett Cooper, 3 hits in that spot. Last night, Michael Busch, 3 hits in that spot. It seems like Craig Counsell is going to trust the matchups, trust the right-left, and keep Cooper in against lefties and Busch in against righties. Both are okay defensively. They're not Gold Glovers. They're not Anthony Rizzo. But they're good enough. And I think the problem is, you would even say, oh, put Michael Busch in third and let Morel figure out first. They tried that. They tried that in the Arizona League in the winter and obviously didn't like what they saw, because they went and got Michael Busch and moved Morel back to third. So Morel is going to be somebody to keep an eye on defensively. Offensively, you love what you're seeing. I was talking yesterday on the Cubs Baseball Channel with Mick Gillespie about how Ian Happ, a few years ago, when he didn't have a position but the Cubs really wanted his bat to grow, they sent him down to the minors and really let him focus on the outfield. Now he's come up and won 2 Gold Gloves and really emerged as a veteran on this team. You can't do that with Morel. The bat is too advanced offensively to let it waste at-bats in the minor leagues. That's why you have to let him figure it out at third base. Now, April, I'm tired of people saying these April games don't matter. If the Cubs win a few more last year in April, they go to the playoffs. So you have to still try to win in April. You can't put Morel out there, let him drown, and lose games because of it. That's why we've seen Craig Counsell put Nick Madrigal at third base late in games when the Cubs have a lead. The issue is, eventually, you hope you're not hamstrung by him at third base, and you're able to keep him in the lineup every day at third. That way, the DH can create so much lineup flexibility for Craig Counsell. But as it is right now, this is the thing to keep an eye on. Craig Counsell, of course, 3-0 at Wrigley Field. He's got a chance to keep it up this weekend against the Dodgers. And I'm excited to watch it. But for now, thank you guys all for listening. Thank you all for tuning in. As always, this episode is brought to you by RCCTV, the brand new media juggernaut at Ridgemore Country Club, bringing you behind-the-scenes footage, episodes, action, anything you could want from another golf course, you're going to get at RCCTV. Some great content, so make sure you follow them on TikTok and on Instagram. This episode, as always, available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and the Cubs HQ website. But for now, thank you all for coming to the Cubs Corner.